This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Barncourt.
And I'm Frances Fagan. Coming up tomorrow on KBOO at 7, it's Democracy Now! With award-winning journalist Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8 on Wednesday Talk Radio, host Lisa Loving talks about a new report from Augsburg, which finds that Oregonians with cancer, heart disease, epilepsy, and other conditions have been forced to pay an average of 10 times more than necessary for at least 20 blockbuster drugs. At 9, it's Political Perspectives. At 10, hear Air Cascadia headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, on The Food Show, Marion Nestle, nutrition educator and author of Food Politics, How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health, is the guest. Call in with questions for Dr. Nestle. And Jen Chapin, musician and food activist, tells us about her work with the organization Why Hunger, and hear her new song, Feed Your Baby. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support. If you are not a KBOO member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
Good night, Frances.
Good night, Robert.
Good night, Sequoia.
18th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m., KBOO will be broadcasting the first town hall meeting called by the nonprofit group Article 5 Convention for Our Children's Future on the issue of the national defense budget. Experts on the panel include Dr. Robert Pollan, Dr. Miriam Pemberton, and Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson. Once again, you can tune in on Thursday, July 18th, from 5:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
The time is 6:02 and you are listening to KBOO Portland. Coming up next is Out Loud Radio. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Wonder Ballroom, presenting New Orleans bounce rapper Big Frida this Friday, July 19th. Big Frida tickets on sale now for this 21 and over show and at the door Friday.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Radio Cab, serving the metro area since 1946 with service 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. Radio Cab offers airport service, wheelchair-accessible vans, and can be reached at 503-227-1212. In Vancouver at 360-694-1234 or RadioCab.net.
Welcome to Portland's queer culture radio program, Out Loud. You are listening to KBOO-FM in Portland. This is Sasha, and I am here tonight with our guest, Christian Baeff, who is CAUSA's LGBT coordinator and also a main driver in this year's Portland Latino Gay Pride. Welcome, Christian. Also joining us is Alan, who is going to be a new co-host for Out Loud. So he's here just kind of learning the ropes and He's here kind of getting to learn the ropes and spend a little time with us. Welcome, Alan.
Thanks, Sasha.
And apparently the mics were off just a second ago, so I want to give Christian another opportunity to say hello. Hello, Christian.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me.
Thanks. So we are going to have a conversation with Christian about some of the work that's happening at CAUSA. We are going to be having a long discussion about what's happening at Portland Latino Gay Pride and talk a little bit about the organization CAUSA LGBT. So let's just jump into it. Christian, could you just talk a little bit about Portland Latino Gay Pride and what it is and when it is and where it is?
Yes, we're very excited because it's coming up. It's this weekend, this Saturday and Sunday, July 20th and 21st. And we have a series of three or four events. We have Voz Alta on Saturday at 7 p.m. and it's happening at the Q Center. Mississippi, Wait. North Mississippi Avenue.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah, and...
Could you tell us what that is?
Yeah, Voz Alta is an evening of music and poetry. It's a smaller event. It's very nice. We have... all ages are invited. And we have some snacks, some beverages. And it's just a very nice ambience and an opportunity to meet new people and just start the celebration of the whole weekend.
Oh my gosh, that sounds wonderful. Do you have any, can you tell us any of the folks that are going to be there performing?
Yeah, we're going to have our board member, Joaquin Lopez, who's directing and creating this amazing show, very cultural, and some folks from Miracle Theater too, that are going to be there, and we're looking forward to it. Also, the same night, the same event, we're having the Mariposa Awards.
Oh.
So these awards will recognize many people that are working very hard in the community. And so it's also a great opportunity to meet these people. And we're also going to recognize a scholarship, because Portland Latino Gay Pride has a scholarship every year. And then we're going to give out that scholarship on the night.
Awesome. Mm-hmm. And for folks who aren't familiar with Joaquin Lopez, amazing, amazing artist and big coordinator of Portland Latino Gay Pride for quite a few years now. And we're going to play a cut from some of his work called For the Disenchanted a little later in the hour. So definitely stay tuned. Could you talk a little more about the Mariposa Award? Do you know of any prior awardees, you know, like that, and what they've done in the community?
Well, I know a few. I just started with the Portland Latino Gay Pride this year with, but I know last year our dear Erica Steinbauer was awarded this award, and it was great because she worked a lot for the community. Now she moved to the East Coast, but. All the work that she did in Portland was wonderful with the Latino community, the immigrant community. So we were very pleased that she was awarded last year.
Oh, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
And what about the scholarship? Could you talk a little more about that, how that got started? Is that...
Yeah, it's with the Equity Foundation, and also there's another scholarship with the Chamber of Commerce. So along with the Equity Foundation, the Portland Latino Gay Pride has a scholarship every year, and the deadline was July 1st. So if you haven't, just keep your eyes and ears open for next year. But it's also a great opportunity to give the opportunity to students who want to go to school and just be there in the community, and of course we look at applications and their stories, and we're gonna give this award on the night of Saturday the 20th.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Mm-hmm. Yeah, what else is happening?
Well, Sunday we have our festival, which is happening at the Jupiter Hotel on Burnside Avenue.
Right next door.
Yeah, right next door. It's happening from 5 p.m. until 9, and it's going to be also a great opportunity for everyone to come. And also wanted to clarify that you don't have to be Latino to come and celebrate with us. Everybody's welcome and invited. I've been in the festival for the last few years, and it's a great festive opportunity, and we hope that everybody's there. So it's at the Jupiter Hotel at 5 p.m. on Sunday, the 21st. Mm. And there is a $5 charge, but it's 21 and over.
Okay.
As well as the after party, we have a dance after party at Embers.
Oh my gosh, how fun.
Yeah. Sunday night, but let's stay up and celebrate.
Yay.
Yeah. So Latino night at Embers, 9 p.m. until it closes at 2 a.m.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Mm-hmm. And I want to kind of ask you, like, hopefully this isn't a triggering question, but, you know, from time to time you hear this, you know, why does there need to be a Latino gay pride?
Well, I had that question too, as many people also ask often, why we have to have a separate Latino gay pride. One of the answers I heard is because we, as Latinos, we also work so much in volunteering different things. We are all in different organizations involved and in the general pride, let's say, and then we want our opportunity to celebrate and just enjoy ourselves. And also just to raise our own community, not to segregate it, but just to raise our community, our families, and also invite everyone to celebrate with us.
Yeah. That's wonderful. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. No problem.
Yay. So if you could just let maybe folks know how to access, you know, the website so they can find out a little more information online.
Yes, we have all the information on our website. It's latinogaypridepdx.com. latinogaypridepdx.com.
Yay. Is there anything else that we should highlight that's happening at the Portland Latino Gay Pride?
Just stop at the different tables. Causa also will have a table at the festival, so awesome. Stop by and say hi.
Yay.
Yeah.
So, Christian, could you talk to us? Tell us what Causa is.
Yeah, Causa is an immigrant rights organization which was founded in 1995. So for many years, the organization fought to prevent anti-immigrant measures to happen. And also, we always supported the LGBT community, but it wasn't until 2011 when we started the program, the LGBT program, where we formally say we recognize that there are so many members of our Latino community who are also LGBT, who are going facing both identities, having to come out of both closets, being gay, LGBT, and many times undocumented as well. Mm-hmm. So we want to recognize that and just raise those issues and the intersection between the two issues.
Yeah, and hopefully, you know, as the LGBT community, hopefully we understand, you know, that there's a very real correlation between what the experience of being in the closet and fearing for the safety of our families, and the same with undocumented folks, you know, fearing living in the shadows and fearing for the safety of their families. And like you said, also to emphasize the fact that so many of us in the community are people of color and are Latino and Latina. Mm-hmm. So it's a really important point. So there's an organization at CAUSA that's focused just on LGBT stuff? Or
It's just the program that we're not a separate, we're just a program of the organization, and we are trying to be involved in all the events that happen throughout the organization, as well as have our own events with the specific community. But we are trying to just be out there and try to let the families and the organizations know that we are out there.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Mm-hmm. Is there a way for people to find that information online?
Yes, we also have a website, and it's causaoregon.org. causaoregon.org, and we have our Facebook, of course. I'll give you the Facebook. Causa Oregon has their own Facebook, but our program has you can find us in causa lgbt.
wonderful. That's so great. And I was also hoping you could just talk a little bit about, I know that we've had a really solid legislative session, you know, for immigrant rights, and I was hoping you could maybe touch on a couple of those victories.
Yes, this year has been wonderful so far. Of course, we had some stuff that we didn't like, but we were able to be part of the passing of the tuition equity, and also the driver's cards for everyone in Oregon. So those were great victories. And also talking about the intersection between the two issues, and of course I'm sure you talked about DOMA before. Yeah. That's a great example of because sometimes people it's hard for people to understand how the two issues correlate. But talking about binational couples. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And how DOMA affects the couples is very important. So that that was also a great victory in the national level that we are very happy to be part of.
Yeah, that was so wonderful. And for folks that aren't familiar with tuition equity, basically, and correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding is that tuition equity means that, so for children of undocumented parents that are going to school in Oregon won't have to pay, previously before this bill passed, they were forced to pay out-of-state tuition.
Yes.
Which, if folks don't know, is really expensive.
Mm-hmm, and it's about three times more. Yeah.
Wow. So it removed that bar. So now people going to college now will be able to pay in-state tuition like everyone else in Oregon.
Yeah, because many of the students that we're talking about, they were brought to this country very small, very young. And they were raised here and they went to their middle school, high school here. And then when it comes time to go to college, they realize they have to pay three times more tuition, and that's just not right. So that's what it changed. And that changed right away. So now in September, when classes begin, they're going to be able to that's applicable already. So.
Oh, that's so wonderful. Mm-hmm. Did you have any questions, Alan? Did you want to chime in? Okay, great. I was hoping you could just remind us again, because I know that the main reason we asked you to come here is for the Portland Latino Gay Pride. So if you could just talk, just kind of go through the main points of the event and kind of like discuss that a little bit more for folks in case they missed it at the beginning, that would be awesome.
Yes. So as I was saying, we're very excited because it's coming up. We were meeting with the board of directors of the Portland Latino Gay Pride for the past few months, planning everything, every detail, and everything's coming. This year's theme is Viva la Vida, celebrating life.
Awesome.
So everything's going to be very colorful and alive. So now we need people to show up. So if you want to show up, check out all the information. It's the Latino Gay Pride, pdx.com. And as I was saying, we have three events. We have the Voz Alta at the Q Center on Saturday at 7 p.m. That's for all ages, as there's a $10 cover. And then also our festival at the Jupiter Hotel on Sunday at 5 p.m. And an after party at Embers. We're going to dance all night at 9 p.m.
Oh my gosh, that sounds so amazing. And folks can find more information online at, what is it? What's the website again?
Sorry. LatinoGayPridePDX.com.
Did you have?
I do. Christian, what is CASA looking at next?
What are we doing next?
Yeah, what's coming up?
Well, CASA in general, we are we're hoping that we're going to be very busy if the big immigration reform happens. So we are getting ready for that. Hopefully, if that happens, we're going to have lots of work. If not, we'll still have a lot of work to do. So. And there will always be fights to be fought. So,
for sure. Mm-hmm. And I would like to just personally reinforce something you've already said about the relationship between CAUSA and Basic Rights Oregon, which is the place I work. It's no secret. I mention it in almost every program. But you know, there's just this wonderful, longstanding relationship between the organizations.
Yes.
And we're so proud and happy to work, you know, so closely. And I think it's just really important. It's a model. Actually, it's been written up by the New York Times, mm-hmm. you know, and I think it's a model for a lot of social justice movements to consider, you know, that, you know, instead of working in our silos on these different issues, that we should come together and move this work forward together. So I'm really
Our support from Basic Rights Oregon is immense, and it's very important to us, because also that was a great part of why we moved forward with the organization coming out in support of the LGBT community. So we are very thankful and very grateful that that we're working with Basic Rights Oregon so closely.
Awesome. And Kristen, I just kind of wanted to talk to you personally a little mm-hmm. bit about, like, how did you get involved with Portland Latino Gay Pride and with CAUSA, and what drew you to this work?
Well, I started knowing CAUSA because they were renting their office in the church I was going to.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I heard through the pastor that what CAUSA was, and I started getting interested, and I started volunteering for about a year and a half, and then I became staff. And just being out there in the community, I found out that the Portland Latino Gay Pride. Mm-hmm. I read an announcement in Facebook, I think it was, that they were looking for more board members. And I already had spent some time with the board members the year before, so I knew I liked all the people that were working in this project and in this event. And I just say, why not? I like the people. I like the event. I'm very passionate about the Latinos coming out there and celebrating, being proud and happy to be LGBT. So I decided to join them. And I ask for permission, of course.
Well, we're so happy that you're part of the movement. And thank you so much for joining us to talk about Portland Latino Gay Pride and all the great work that you're doing at CALSA and CALSA LGBT. Anything else you want to add before we move on?
No, I'm very thankful for being here. And I just hope that everyone join us at Portland Latino Gay Pride this coming weekend. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. And could you just remind us too, like where and when the Portland Latino Gay Pride, the events will take place?
Yes. So the festival is at the Jupiter Hotel on Burnside at 5 p.m. this Sunday. It's for 21 and over. And then we have a dance party afterwards at Embers at 9 p.m. And then the Saturday we have the Voz Alta. It's a great cultural and event full of poetry and food and drinks at the Q Center on Saturday at 7.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Christian. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay. Now we're going to turn to just a little bit of music, and then we're going to come back and talk to Alan a little bit about the great work that he's doing and will be doing as a co-host for Out Loud.
I want to tell you about a Trayvon Martin that's still alive.
Summer streets and the pavements are burning. I sit around trying to smile, but the air is so heavy and dry. Strange voices are saying,
what did they
things
say?
I can't understand. It's too close for comfort. This heat has got right out of hand. It's a cruel summer. Leaving me here on my own. It's a cruel,
it's a cruel,
cruel summer.
Welcome back. I'm Alan, and I'm here with Sasha. Thanks so much for listening to Out Loud. We are celebrating Sasha's last month in Portland, so that it's going to be, after she leaves, it's going to be just a cruel summer. That was Cruel Summer. Sasha's leaving us. That was Richard Cheese. So Sasha's been working in Portland for the last couple of years with Basic Rights Oregon, and is heading off to the Bay Area to work with the Transgender Law Project. Is that right?
The Law Center.
The Law Center.
Yeah.
And I have been reading up on the Law Center
over the past week and trying to get a handle on what the work they're doing and hopefully some of the work you'll be doing, Sasha. And so I have some questions. I want to talk a little bit about the organization and some of the topics that they've been working on. It seems like some really interesting things are happening for transgender folks in California right now. Mm-hmm. So it's been pretty exciting to do some research and read up on the work that folks are working on and that the Law Center has been involved with. I want to start with sort of a general take on the Transgender Law Center. It describes itself as an organization that envisions a future where gender self-determination and authentic expression are seen as basic rights and matters of common human dignity. The Law Center, and this makes sense given the sort of work that it's set out to do, believes in the power of the law to protect those who need it, and in the power of people to protect one another. Sometimes laws are the problem that needs solving, but as a legal organization, we must have faith that our system, though flawed, contains the tools we need to use the law to ensure justice for transgender people. Now, what I want to ask you, Sasha, is how do we know when justice arrives in a community? How does we as a community know what the final outcome looks like? How can we put our finger on something and say, we've done the work that we set out to do and justice has been accomplished in some particular situation or some facet of people's social experience? Now, I know that's it's possibly an unanswerable question. I mean, it's possible that no one has ever been able to answer that question fully, but I'd like to hear your thoughts on it.
Oh, it's a really interesting question. And I can only say that, like, for example, in law school, if you use the word justice, you were given demerits. Not literally, but pretty much, because it's just, you know, it's a word it's a big weighty word that, you know, I have no idea when we're there. You know, I don't know. All I know is that we're not there.
Yeah.
We're not even close. And all I can do is keep chipping at what I feel is, you know, issues that are within reach, within our circles of concern, things that we can change here and now and think hard about the fact that we're not the last generation to move through and that, you know, there's kids growing up now that need these protections and to do everything that we can so we can look back and say, you know, like we are now saying thank you to the older generation, you know, for putting their shoulders to the wheel to move this movement to the place that we are so successful now. I don't think this by any means, you know, the great work we're doing now, it is, but it's also, you know, the hard work that's been done by so many people in this community and in the country and in the world at large that have, you know, lived through much worse times and have contributed so much to this work.
A commitment to a legal concerns, legal justice, if we can continue to bat that word around,
no.
Even if we can't define it exactly, has been a thread through the work that you've been doing for quite a while.
Yeah, definitely. It's something that's always, you know, I think it's most a part of everyone's life, but, you know, when I came out and started to really dig deep into some of the issues, you know, I just became inflamed in a way that, you know, I can, you know, I've tried to move forward in my own way, but, you know, it's taken a lot of different forms, but especially focusing on issues impacting the trans community. But, you know, I think that you can't do this work and not realize, as we've already talked about with Christian, that our work and our movement is intersects with every other social justice movement, whether you're talking about racial justice, immigrant rights, you're talking about reproductive justice or whatever it is, you know, we're all in this together. The people that are, you know, oppressing or holding us down, aren't just targeting transgender people. You know, they're the same folks who are trying to strip rights, you know, reproductive rights. They're the same people. And so, you know, I don't think that, you know, whatever that saying is about the, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend necessarily. But, you know, I think it's really important to recognize the intersectionality between the fact that, you know, so many of us face those same issues and there's so many intersections and that we're fighting the same fight, that it's really important, you know, for us to come together as a movement and not silo us and working on, you know, our basic rights, you know, for just transgender rights. It's important to recognize that we're working as part of a larger movement. Like, how many times can I say the same thing in different ways?
The concern isn't just that there are people who are who seek to limit other people's rights. It's a systemic, aspect of the world we live in, and that's where the law can be really powerful in working to counteract those systemic forms of oppression.
Yeah, I think, not to interrupt, I'm sorry, but I think that an important piece of this conversation, though, and something that I feel like organizations like Basic Rights Oregon has done really well, and my perception is that the Transgender Law Center has done really well too, is making sure that you can't, and I've heard Celeste and other people on KBOO already remark on this, but you can't just have the law without the grassroots backing. You have to like get a community engagement and community involvement, you know, because that piece is just critical to not just defend but enforce those laws. So it's one thing to have them, it's another thing to really have them. You know, so it's important to have that infrastructure in place and to have that community involvement, so you're not just, you know, making these policies and legal changes in some dark room. You know, this is, and not just that, I mean, it's obviously the other piece is that, you know, that, you know, any organization that's doing this work right is going to be reaching out to the community and listening to what the needs are and prioritizing those needs rather than what we think we should be prioritizing. So
indeed, we need to be trading stories as often as possible. Yes. I want to turn a little bit to some of the work that the Transgender Law Center has actually been doing, and some of the developments in transgender law.
You're like me.
And we're looking at the Employment Non-Discrimination Act first.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
this was this month there was a Senate committee, Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, which is seems like a broad range of topics for a single Senate caucus, but okay, there it is. And they have passed out a version of the Employment Non-Discrimination Act that that bans workplace discrimination based on gender identity and expression.
Yeah, it's an employment non-discrimination protection federal law that would protect trans people from being fired or not hired or demoted for whatever reason based on gender identity. There's been a huge step forward. In fact, I don't know if you have that in your notes, but the Transgender Law Center represented a case recently involving the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission that was a huge precedent-setting case that has great precedent for every state in the country and was a huge step forward for employment discrimination, protecting gender identity. And it was a ruling, not to get into the weeds here, but it was a ruling that's been part of a trend of court rulings that is interpreting the word sex to mean gendered identity discrimination, dating back to a case involving woman who was working at an accounting firm back in the 80s, and it's a case that worked its way all the way up to the Supreme Court, and it involved a woman who was working there and was up for a promotion, and apparently her employers or her, you know, the people that were reviewing her felt like she wasn't behaving in a manner that was consistent with what they viewed her gender identity was. In other words, that she was appearing in trousers and wasn't wearing makeup, you know, and they felt like she should doll it up a little bit, and she refused and was passed over. And so she brought suit and ended up getting litigated in the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court ruled that sex discrimination is defined broadly to include, you know, gender identity presentation. So it was a huge win, and that's been the trend among courts, and so that was a huge step forward, you know, with the Transgender Law Center representing the Equal Employment Opportunity Commission. But ENDA will be a huge step also it'll just, you know, solidify that law and make it unambiguous and national, and it'll protect, you know, the gays and lesbians who live in states that don't have those protections as well. So it's a huge step forward. There's, you know, in addition to the employment non-discrimination protections, unfortunately, there needs to be housing and public accommodations protections for those folks. In Oregon, we're lucky enough to have those, but in a lot of states, they don't have those protections. So that's something, you know, that we'll be working on nationally, I'm sure, as a movement.
Certainly. Mm-hmm. And it's always worth noting that it's difficult to get any law passed. So this is just, you know, one step in the process. It's just one committee that has said, yes, we want this, the full Senate to consider this. So beyond that, there's also the House that needs to take a look at it.
And we've seen what they've done with the immigration reform bill that they've recently received. So that's, you know, that's something that needs to get worked out for sure.
Indeed. And I do want to note also that our Senator Merkley was mm-hmm. part of making sure that end up passed through this committee.
So yeah, and Senator Merkley has been a huge supporter of trans rights too, and it's not just sexual orientation. Gender identity has been a huge piece of what he talks about when he talks about ENDA, and was actually part of the Senate hearing committee that heard testimony from the first openly trans person, Kyler Broaddus, who testified in front of the Senate committee last year. ENDA's come up almost every year, if folks don't know that, and hasn't made it out, hasn't made it to the president yet, but, you know, we're hoping this is the year. But Senator Merkley has been wonderfully supportive in making sure that ENDA, he is trans inclusive. If folks don't know it, I don't want to dwell on this, but some years back, gender identity was actually stripped from the bill in the hopes of, you know, making it more appealable to decision makers and lawmakers, and it didn't pass anyway, and it created a huge scar. But, you know, that's the past, and every year since then it's been inclusive, and I just want to give, you know, a huge thank you to Senator Merkley for that support.
That's great. Legislative work is obviously not just national. It's at the state level, it's at the local level.
Yeah.
And California is just passing now the School Success and Opportunity Act. And this bill ensures that transgender students will have the opportunity to succeed in school. Mm-hmm. Do you have something you can say about what this looks like and how it will affect transgender youth who are in schools?
I do. You know, I don't work there yet, so I don't know more than what I've read. You know, I'm not involved in any backroom discussions about the bill or how, you know, that was moving forward. But it was basically a bill to clarify that, you know, kids should be able to participate in whatever sports that they consistent with whatever their gender identity is. You know, the law actually is really progressive in California, but it's part of a process, you know, again, having law is one thing, but, you know, sometimes it can be interpreted in many different ways. And this was a way to unambiguously clarify that this is, these kids are protected and they shouldn't be barred from contributing in their schools in their school life in a productive way. You know, kids should be focusing on education and not, you know, being denied access to, you know, sports. Or another piece of that was the bathroom issue, which unfortunately consistently comes up as a huge issue. And it clarified that kids should be able to use restrooms consistent with their gender identity, which, you know, has created a huge problem for our community because, you know, people have had, you know, health problems from not going to the bathroom because they're so scared to use a restroom. And, you know, often they're given a choice of either using a restroom inconsistent with their gender identity or some washroom, you know, on the other side of the building. And this just makes it clear that that kids should be able to access restrooms and facilities that are consistent with their gender identity. And, you know, they should just be focusing on education and doing what every other student is doing there, and that's learning. You know, so it's a huge step forward, and we're moving that way in Oregon. And recently, if folks aren't familiar with this, there was a huge win for the trans community in removing the surgery requirement, which had been in place for, you know, a few years, which is actually, you know, I don't want to criticize it because it was actually a progressive step forward for folks to be able to change their gender identity documents, you know, back in the 80s, you know, but it's an outdated policy and it's not realistic because requiring folks to get surgeries when most healthcare plans just automatically deny any kind of treatment whatsoever is just unrealistic and and means that folks will never have appropriate documentation. Mm-hmm. And we know what that means in this day and age when you need to have appropriate documentation for almost everything you do. So we had a huge win. We were able to remove the surgery requirement for obtaining, you know, a new birth certificate. So now folks, the only difference is folks still before had to obtain a letter from a doctor saying they had had surgery, but they still have to get a letter from a doctor, but now it's just stating that they've had appropriate clinical treatment instead of having to have surgery. And that takes a place in January of 2014, so it's not effective immediately, but it'll be a huge step forward so folks can get their name changed and their gender identity changed in the same proceeding rather than having to spend a lot of time and money, you know, going through different sections. And it's just consistent, too, also, that change with what's happening with the Social Security Administration and the Passport Agency, and even the Veterans Administration has removed that onerous surgery requirement. So now folks who need to change their Social Security gender marker or any other documents can go down and get those things changed without having to have some onerous. And it also, what about people that, you know, can't have or don't want surgery? You know, that's another issue. But I am really blabbering. Too much coffee. Sorry, everybody.
It's okay, Sasha. We understand. It's your last show.
And yes, the American Medical Association came out last month as supporting accurate birth certificates for transgender folks.
So, do you guys mind if I interject something?
No, please, Rebecca. Yeah. And you, does everybody know who Rebecca is?
I'm the button pusher tonight.
Thank you, by the way.
So, Sasha, you said something that kind of resonated with me about the outdated policy, and I guess I just wanted to add to that in addition to insurance companies not wanting to cover the surgery, there's a lot of trans and genderqueer folks that don't necessarily subscribe to the idea that gender identity should have anything to do with a surgery or any kind of a modification to your body, and that gender identity is basically in between your ears, not your legs. And to me, that is another reason why requiring somebody to alter their body is not only outdated, it's just wrong.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And I think it's imperative that as a movement, we think hard about that when we are working to make administrative and legislative change, that, you know, we don't want to move toward a new binary. You know, we want to like deconstruct that binary completely, because you're right. So many folks in our community are fluid, and especially when you're talking about youth. You know, so it's you're right. It's battling, though. There's, I think, a lot of it. I'm just completely speculating now.
Well, there's also this idea of where trans people, and I know several trans people themselves that, you know, for them their identity is not fluid. Like they're very firmly entrenched in either a male or female identity.
Yeah,
but they consider themselves, you could say, non-op. Mm-hmm. Like. Yeah. They want to keep their body the way they've had their body, and they're happy with it, yet they're very firmly entrenched in their gender identity. And again, requiring trans people to have surgery to affirm their identity is oppressive. It should be the choice of the individual.
Yeah, I think again, just totally speculating, but I think part of it is that there's this underlying current of heteronormativity that lies at the base of all of that. You know, there's just this fear that, you know, of same-sex couples, you know, like I think that that's true for the marriage issue too, you know, so I think that's at the core of it, is this homophobic approach. It's transphobic too, but it's also homophobic.
I also think that requiring surgery for you know, for legitimate public identification, you know, for a transgender person, it is an opportunity for moneyed interests to say, you have to have, you know, you need to spend a lot of money.
Yeah.
It's required, you know, whether your insurance covers it or not, mm-hmm. you need to do something that's really expensive.
Right.
That's an absolute requirement for you to get what you believe you need.
Mm-hmm.
And taking that out, I think is that aspect of it is progressive in itself.
Yeah.
You know, to take gender identity outside of the marketplace and put it back in the social.
Yeah, definitely. I think a part of, you know, maybe the thinking too, and I'm completely speculating again, but is that there's this fear that, you know, it's like this Rubicon that people want to set up, that, you know, there's this fear that people are going to make a mistake or, you know, decide they don't want to transition or they're not sure, you know. And the irony of all of that is that, you know, I've met very few trans people that, you know, they know who they are. It's the people around them that are unsure, you know, that have the difficulties.
Yeah.
You know, so.
There's a Samuel Delaney book, Trouble in Triton, where folks are free to change their gender as many times as they want to.
Yeah.
So it focuses on a gentleman who's, you know, you could describe him as unhappy and really not willing to grapple with what it is that doesn't work for him.
Yeah.
And so he goes through these repeated physical changes because they're so easy. You know, he's still the same person in the end. He still has to, you know, look in the mirror at the end of the day and say, who am I and what am I and what do I want in my life? And right. those core questions haven't changed for him. By the way, Delaney is an incredibly powerful, brilliant queer writer. He's working with Clarion West right now in Seattle. I'm going to go up next week and hear him speak. So I'm very excited about that. He's been a longtime hero of mine. So if anybody wants to, you know, head up to Seattle next week, it should be pretty good.
Yeah, I suspect a lot of our listeners are...
Yeah, he's great. So I just want to touch on one more thing that the Transgender Law Center folks there were talking about recently. They put out a statement that they expressed disappointment that the San Francisco Pride welcomed military recruiters to their celebration this year for the first time ever. This in the face of. The fact that transgender folks are not permitted to be in the military and are discharged, is that right? For being trans, is that correct?
Yeah. You know, a lot of folks are surprised to hear that, which surprises me actually. But a lot of folks are, you know, stunned. They hear that "Don't Ask, Don't Tell" got repealed, and guess what? That was great, and that was a step forward. But it doesn't apply to transgender people. You know, I know many transgender women, including myself and Rebecca, have served honorably, you know, in the U.S. military, you know, and would never dream of coming out during the military because it's just not an open space or a safe space to do that. So, yeah, I think that that's a really appropriate position. I haven't been involved again in those discussions, but I think that makes sense, you know, and it's a clear statement that, you know, until you're inclusive, you know, we're not going to, you know, allow you to come on to the, you know, the, and join us at our Pride parade for sure. You know, that seems really inappropriate. But, you know, I think like with any kind of, institution, I think it's just a matter, you know, it's a matter of dialogue and a matter of continuing to, you know, do that outreach with the appropriate parties. And there's some great work being done by OutServe. And they are, you know, pushing that work forward. There was a recent, you know, openly identified, trans-identified SEAL that came out. If people aren't familiar with her, Kristen, I can't remember her last, Beck, I think, was a SEAL actually and came out recently as a trans woman. And, you know, it's just a common story. And you know, trans people are, you know, a lot of us have served honorably and have very wonderful experiences with the military and would have considered staying in and serving had it not been for that policy. So I think it's something that it's time to change. And it's similar to, you know, a lot of the other battles happening around the country. You know, there's a lot of work being done, a lot of movement forward in a lot of fronts, but, you know, it's important to remember that we bring the whole community forward, you know, rather than just, you know, parts of it. So.
Indeed. And this is the Pride Parade that I believe just invited Bradley Manning to be their honorary Grand Marshal or whatever the title is, like in absentia, and then withdrew that under pressure.
Yeah.
So what I'm hoping to hear when we check in with you perhaps later this year, next year, is that you're going to be down there and you're going to be getting these Pride folks to put their thinking caps on.
Yeah, I know that there's people, specifically Cecilia Chung, who's an amazing advocate and has done so much work for the trans community that is on the Human Rights Council at San Francisco and lobbied hard to keep Bradley Manning on as the honorary, what's the title?
It's Grand Marshal.
Grand Marshal, yeah.
I'm uncertain what it is.
Did a lot of work to keep, you know, that him on as that honor. And yes, definitely, I will continue that fight because I do view him as a hero. As I do Edward Snowden and others.
Well, this is Sasha's last show with Out Loud, and we're so grateful for her work. Sasha, I want to ask you, I want to sort of bring this home.
Yeah.
You know, What are you most proud of in the work you've done here in Portland?
Oh boy, I don't know. I mean, proud's a weird word. I've been really. It's been really satisfying to work around so many great social justice movement folks, you know, whether it's the people, you know, doing this work at Out Loud to amplify the voices of activists and advocates around the state, and just being part of the, you know, the wonderful news program that's here that has done so much work to get the word out about what's really happening, you know, and if folks aren't, I would recommend getting involved with that. You know, it's just such a wonderful product and so much effort, volunteer run, volunteer driven, you know, it's just a really, really great place. And it was a great place for me to come out and transition within, actually. So it's been a really safe space. And, you know, my heart really lies with KABU for sure. I'm proud to work with the people at Basic Rights Oregon, the Q Center, you know, all the LGBTI organizations I've worked with have just been phenomenal. So, you know, I feel like we've moved trans justice forward in significant ways, not me personally, but definitely the organization, and we'll continue to do that, you know, as we move forward.
How do we signal a song?
Oh, we're going to actually jump into another song and take a little bit of a break from the Yak Yak Yak. Of course, that was some Magnetic Fields, and I'm not going to cry. Nope. Okay, so I'm going to turn the tables. Enough about me. I want to talk about Alan and the great work Alan's done. Alan's been on the program before, if you don't recognize him. He is involved with a lot of different organizations in town. And firstly, and profoundly, has been the organizer yearly of Thrill the World. Could you talk about what that is?
Certainly. I'm not sure that profound is the right word for it, but it's something that's a lot of fun. So we do a thriller dance once a year. And we just I just started talking to folks today about beginning to schedule practices later this fall and some public performances. And we just get together and dance Thriller 6 minutes. There's a choreographed performance that that we learn based on the moves that are in the original Thriller video. And we do it at the same time as folks around the world, anybody who wants to organize one. So there's hundreds of them around the world every year. And this year will be our seventh Thrill the World Portland. And we use it, we do ours in particular as a fundraiser for SMRC, Portland's Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center, which is this really great queer, trans, really inclusive youth rec center here in Portland. They're on Sandy Boulevard now. And the youth really have what I like about SMRC, what really gives me a good feeling about it is the degree to which they involve the youth themselves in designing the program, programs that they hold. So I'm always really excited. You know, it's a fair amount of work to organize it and find a location and teach all these classes and deal with a lot of volunteers and get it done. But it's the fact that we do it as a fundraiser for SMRC every year is what brings me back to keep putting it on. And so that'll be coming up later this fall. You can find us on Facebook under thrilltheworld.portland if you want to come out and learn the dance.
Do it. Yeah. You know you want to do it.
Yeah.
You get to dress as a zombie.
It's true. You don't have to, but almost everybody does.
Super creepy. Just saying. But it looks fun. Also, could you talk about Manifest?
Oh, sure. Manifest Men's Wellness Center. I've been serving as board president for the last year and a half. And over the summer, we shut down our programming and we withdrew from the location we've been at for the last 5 years or so. And we're starting not exactly from scratch, but we're spending our time right now listening, going out and talking to folks, surveying folks with the help of some PSU students about what men need and want when it comes to wellness and wellness support. So we're really in a sort of a beginning of a really intensive listening process, so that we can create an organization that serves men really well and you know, helps them feel empowered to create their own communities and their own support systems and, you know, really feel good. And it's something I'm really excited about. I think we're beginning to head in a really good direction. And I think men are going to have some really interesting things to say to us about what they're looking for. So.
Awesome. And you're going to start co-hosting the Out Loud program?
That's yes, I believe I am.
Yay! Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Alan, for coming onto the program.
Thank you, Sasha, for everything that you've done in Portland for our communities.
Yeah, I just want to make a quick couple of announcements before we jump into the last music, which is going to be a great song from Joaquin Lopez that was mentioned earlier regarding Portland Latino Gay Pride. It'll be called For the Disenchanted, and I won't be able to back announce it, but I just wanted to announce a couple of other things before then, and that is the first is that on July 20th from 5 to 9 p.m., there's going to be a body positive pool party planned by and for queer and trans youth of color. And that's going to be at the Matt Dishman Community Center at 77 Northeast Knott. And so I encourage folks to check that out and get involved with that. And also, I just want to announce that if folks aren't familiar with it, there's an LGBTQ adoptive parent support group that takes place on the third Thursday of the month from 6 to 8 p.m. And there's a meet and greet from 6:30 to 8 p.m. support group, and that's going to be at the Q Center on the third Thursday at 4115 North Mississippi. There's going to be a guest speaker this Thursday talking about pre and post adoption support. And I know they've had, you know, some amazing speakers come there, including Judge Beth Allen, who is, you know, one of the biggest superstars in Portland, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, I want to remind folks, too, again, you know, that the star of our program was Christian Bayef, who talked about Latino Gay Pride, Portland Latino Gay Pride, which is going to happen this weekend. And there's all kinds of things happening. Voice Alta is going to be taking place on Friday. And there's going to be a festival at the Jupiter Hotel from 5 p.m. to 9 p.m. And just so much happening. Please look it up at latinogaypridepdx.com. And it's Voz Alta is going to be on Saturday, July 20th at 7 p.m. And then make sure you attend the festival, you know, at the Jupiter right next door to KBOO. Come by and say hi to us, too, at the same time. There's going to be a lot of acts, and just want to thank everybody for all of the great support, you know, supporting KBOO and supporting Out Loud. And I want to thank our engineer, Rebecca, for the amazing work that she does. Yay, Rebecca! I want to thank Alan again for coming onto the program and moving forward as the new co-host with Natalie and the great Carla. And I just want to wish everybody a really wonderful evening. Thank you.
Ella durante el día se peina, de colores ella se viste, satisfecha lo que es normal. Ella muere un poco cada día cuando intenta ser esa esposa de un amor tradicional. Ella, cansada de ser de una de ellas, quien vive observando aquellas, las que necesitan la voluntad. Baila, baila ella, baila enamorada de esa mujer, la cual vive bajo su piel. Baila, baila ella, baila enamorada de esa mujer, la cual vive sus convicciones. Enamoró de ella como un caballo bajo la luna. Ella duerme con las moscas. Ella quiere comer de ella, saborear ella misma una fruta, la matriz de un amor semenal. Ella protegida con la sombra de la luna cuando el hombre sol se duerme. Baila, baila ella, baila enamorada de esa mujer, la cual vive bajo su piel. Baila, baila ella, baila enamorada de esa mujer, la cual vive sus convicciones.